everybody. Welcome into the Investing in Real Estate show. I'm Clayton Morris.
I'm Natalie Morris.
And on today's show, we're going to talk about passive loss, understanding what passive loss means for you as a real estate investor. If you are new to the program, this is the show where we help you build passive income, one rental property at a time. The vehicle that we use is real estate, but we really care about the cash flow. We care about financial education and making sure that you are smart and intelligent when it comes to your finances. And I'm super excited, Natalie. You know why?
I know why.
Why do you know why? Why do you know
why? Because we got our bud Tom on the line today.
That's right. Tom Wheelwright is back, the smartest tax accountant in the country, in the world. He's the founder and CEO of Wealthability. Now, Tom, welcome to the show. We love having you here. You've got a brand new company or an extension and expansion of your company, ProVision.
We do. It's very exciting to be here. You know, you guys are the best. And by the way, your people are fantastic. We talk to lots of them every week.
As they
come in and ask about our services and how we can help. And we absolutely love them. So I'm very excited about Wealthability. So what we've done is this is an expansion. This is a worldwide global expansion of what we started with ProVision. And now what we're going to be able to do is we're able to provide a lot more tools, software, education, and this will be key for everybody listening. We're building an entire global network of CPAs dedicated to the tax-free wealth message. So it's a movement right now. And we've just felt enormous energy from you guys. Thank you very much. And from just a lot of our friends and people around us, clients that have just are so excited about this expansion because there's so much more we're going to be able to do.
Now, a lot of times we have investors that have listened to our podcast and they hear us preaching about tax-free wealth. And the basic tenet of tax-free wealth is that taxes are an investor's biggest expense. So there are ways that you can become a legitimate investor in order to live a more tax-friendly type of life. And that was the big eye-opener that I got when I read Tax-Free Wealth. And so we always sort of share the details of your book, but inevitably we have people come back to us and say, my accountant says you can't do this, and my accountant says that's not right. And more often than not, we don't have the actual answer to their very specific questions. So that's why we wanted to have you on today, so that you can, number one, tell us, sort of expand on the message of Tax-Free Wealth, like you had just said, and then help equip people with the right questions to push back towards their accountants or find one that now is in your network. Better yet, right?
Well, I mean, ultimately that's why we're creating the Tax-Free Wealth Network. We just run into this all the time. It's not just, you know, the people that you've sent to us. It's other people. It's all people all over the world. We have people, you know, I've had people in Rome come up to me and say, where do I find somebody here? Okay, to be able to do this, because my accountant keeps saying I can't do this. The tax law, the first thing that people really have to understand is the tax law is a series of incentives. That's really all it is. And once you get that fixed in your mind, then you stop being afraid of the tax law. And that's really the primary message of tax-free wealth is, look, you can partner with the government. In fact, let me put it this way. You're already a partner with the government. Okay, most people in high earning jobs are paying 40% or more to the government, either between federal and state taxes. They're paying 40% of their hard earned income. They have a government as their partner. Their partner is taking 40%, and people keep asking, but what am I getting for it? Well, but the partner also says, look, we'll take 40% if you're an employee and spend all your money. However, if you are an investor in things that we want you to invest in, like real estate, then we will give you tax incentives to do so, because we know that you're better suited as the public, as the investor, to build housing, to build commercial buildings, to build apartment complexes, to do all of these things that need to be done in the economy, but the government is ill-equipped to do themselves. So they let the private sector do it, and they provide incentives for them. So when you're looking for the challenge with a lot of tax preparers, especially, and tax advisors, is that A, they're really not specialists in real estate, which is a fairly technical area. It's one I've specialized in since I started my career. And it's also that they're looking at the Internal Revenue Code as prevention. Okay, you can't do this, you can't do this, you can't do this. We just take the different approach in tax-free wealth that it's not what you can and can't do, it's how can you do what you want to do? And that's what I think we're going to talk today is how can you take the tax benefits of real estate that you would if you ask the question, can I take this, your accountant may just say, no, you can't, rather than asking the question. And the question is, how can I do this? Does
right.
that make sense?
Yeah. It's a lot like how we parent. We tell our kids what to do instead of what not to do. Like right. instead of don't put that in your mouth, it's like, give that to mommy.
and what's their when they turn two, what's the question they start asking? Why?
Why?
Why? Why? Yeah. Why? Why? And that's really the question. And unfortunately, we train it out of them for the most part. But that's the question we ought to be asking is why or how? How can I?
Yeah.
So at a 50,000 foot level, Tom, we're going to talk about passive loss today. Understanding it, we're going to deep dive this on today's episode. What is passive loss?
Well, so in the Internal Revenue Code, there are basically three buckets. I think of them as buckets of income and expense. And one bucket is what's called ordinary income and expense. One bucket is called investment or portfolio income and expense. And one bucket is called passive income and expense. And the reason the buckets are important is because for the two buckets, investment and or portfolio and passive, you can only deduct losses in that category against income from that category. So in other words, a passive loss only can be deducted against passive income. So if you have a passive loss, a lot of people will say, oh, well, we're stuck. We have a passive loss, therefore we can't deduct it because we have no passive income. So we have two possible ways of accomplishing what we want to accomplish. So if the question again is, how can I deduct my loss that would otherwise be passive? Well, there's two things we could do. Either we can change the nature of the loss so it's not passive any longer, so it's ordinary, or we can change the nature of other income so that it is passive instead of ordinary. Okay, so those are our two options realistically when we come to passive losses. Now, the way passive losses affect real estate is that real estate rental is what we'd call per se or just automatically passive, okay? And you actually have to, it starts in the passive category, and then what we have to do is we have to move it out of the passive category if we want to move it out of the passive category. Or if we can't do that, and I'll give you the rules of how we can do that. If we can't do that, then what we have to do is then we need to move other income from other businesses into the passive category. So that's kind of 50,000 foot view.
Right. This is an important question because so often we talk about how real estate is a very tax-friendly investment, but we have a lot of high-earning individuals who listen to our show. So they take this information to their accountant and say, I want to invest in real estate. And the accountant says, it's not going to matter because you make over $150,000 a year. So you can't claim passive loss because, and I was reading in your chapter in Garrett Sutton's book, The Loopholes of Real Estate, you wrote, I think, two or three chapters for that, right?
Yes.
Yeah. And you were talking about how the rules say that if you make over $150,000 as a couple, isn't it?
Yes.
Or $100,000 yeah. per person, then you are up against a wall. You can't claim passive loss, right? So then that's why this trick to make it more of an active form of income that's the answer, right?
Right, because there's two ways that you can turn a passive loss from real estate into ordinary income. One is that you and that just phases out between 100 and 150,000. You can earn under $100,000 total income, not counting your real estate. And then you get up to $25,000 of losses per year, basically automatically. Okay. So you can claim up to $25,000. If you have more than $25,000 of losses, those carry over. They're still passive loss carry over to the next year. But up to $25,000, that's called an active real estate investor. And it's a really easy test to meet. The test is what's your income. And if your income's under $100,000, then you get that up to $25,000. If it's between $100,000 and $150,000, it starts phasing out until at $150,000, you get none of it. Well, let's say that your income's, $300,000-$400,000 a year, and now you don't get that active investor opportunity. So you have a couple of choices. One, frankly, is to work with your tax advisor to create a strategy to reduce your taxable income, your adjusted gross income, to under $100,000. That's actually a legitimate thing that we do with clients all the time. Another thing to do without reducing your cash flow, of course. Another thing, though, is what's called a real estate professional. Now, understand that the benefits of the tax law are really intended towards people who are not casual investors, but professional investors. There's many more benefits for professional investors generally. Even if you were trading stocks, there are more benefits if you're a professional stock trader than if you're a casual stock trader. And that's the same thing is true in real estate. So the government really likes the professional investor. I mean, it makes sense because you end up with, better housing. You end up with, really you're being a better partner by being a professional investor. Now, then tax law defines professional investor for this purpose very specifically. And there's three rules that you have to follow. Okay. So the first is either you or your spouse must spend more than 750 hours actively involved in the real estate. Now, that could be that you're managing the real estate. It could be that you own a construction company. It could mean that you're a real estate agent, okay, or broker. Those all qualify for that 750 hours. It doesn't have to be in your specific real estate, okay? In other words, you don't have to do 750 hours in every single property you own. And in fact, you could own one property, but own a construction company, and you would still be a real estate professional. Okay. So you have to spend more than 750 hours in the real estate business is really
so that works out to about really 15 hours a week.
It is. So, it's about 15 hours a week. Now there's a key here. Now I hope everybody heard it. And that is that it is either you or your spouse. So you don't both have to be real estate professionals. So let's say that one of you has a high earning job and one of you is working part-time or, you're with the kids and you're part-time and you decide, well, look, I could spend 15 hours a week doing real estate and that would be awesome. Well, if you do that, then you're both considered, because you file a joint return, you're considered real estate professional and you meet that 750 hour test. Now, there's another test you have to meet, and that is that you have to spend more time in your real estate businesses than you do in your other businesses, and that includes your employment. So if you have a full-time job, it could be difficult to be a real estate professional. And if you and your spouse both have a full-time job, it could be really difficult to be a real estate professional. It's kind of a get out of jail free card. Okay. Mm-hmm. Because if you meet this test, then you have to meet it every year, by the way. So if you meet this test and you get all of your losses, there's no limit. There's no $25,000 limit. There's no limit. You can deduct it against any kind of income. You can deduct it against capital gain. You can deduct it against your wages. You can deduct it against other businesses. Doesn't matter. Okay. It's just an ordinary loss at that point. So that is get out of jail free card. Now there's a third rule though, that you really have to pay attention to. And I see this missed all the time. Not only do you have to meet the 750 hours in real estate tests, you actually have to work 500 hours in every single property. Now that's like impossible, right? So what they allow you to do is aggregate or combine all of your properties and treat it as a single activity. When you do that, Now they're saying, well, you may have 25 single family homes, but we're going to treat them as a single property. Okay. And you make that election on your tax return. If you do not make that election, you're done for that year. Okay. In other words, you cannot go back and amend the return and make the election. You can't change your mind and make the election. You can't make the election on an audit. You are just done for that year. If you miss that election, you're done. So you have to make that election, and that's your tax preparer is responsible to make that election.
So 500 hours, not per property, but per, like the IRS will allow you to group them as,
right.
You know, if you have 25 single family homes, you can, those can be grouped. Now, how do you delineate like which, how you're grouping them? Can you just say, I've got 100?
You group them all.
Okay.
When you make that election, you're actually electing to group all of them as a single property. So you could have, I mean, you could even go so far as saying, I've got 100 single family homes. I've got a limited partnership interest in a few multifamily projects. And, you know, and I own a commercial building. And you can group all of those. Okay. Even your limited partnership interests. So there are some real opportunities there if you, you know, if you find that you think you meet that 750-hour test.
Today's episode is brought to you by Purple Mattresses. You know, in the new year, one of the things that I wanted to do was try to get better night's sleep. You just see your whole body suffering as a result of not getting a proper, you know, seven to eight hours of sleep a night. Even they say like one day of getting less than that amount of sleep can make your whole health suffer. You can see inflammation in the body in just a short amount of time. But you need a great place to sleep. If you're going to spend that much time sleeping, why not have a great mattress? And I used to wake up with a stiff neck, backaches. That was until we got a Purple mattress in the house and the Purple pillows. Purple pillows combined with the Purple mattress is fantastic. I finally found the sleep that I've been searching for. And you know, what you do is I toss and turn a lot during the night. I find myself now on the Purple mattress not doing that. I kind of find one position and I go to sleep nicely, and so does my wife. And if you're struggling to get a good night's sleep, a Purple mattress is for you. If you're constantly waking up tired, you know, it's not you, it's your mattress. Honestly, a lot of people sleep on those spring mattresses, you know, with the coils, and those just do not work effectively. They're actually pushing against the pressure points in your body. And also, when you go to one of those stores where you think you can actually lay on in the showroom floor for like a few minutes and actually get a good handle on what kind of mattress and how good it's going to be, you cannot do it that way. That's why Purple Mattress will actually give you a 100-night risk-free trial. And if you're not fully satisfied, you can return your mattress for a full refund, free shipping, free returns, the whole thing. It also has a 10-year warranty. And they'll actually do free in-home setup and take away your old mattress right inside your home. So 100 nights, you can probably get a pretty good handle on how great this mattress is in just a few short days or even a few weeks. The Purple Smart Comfort Grid on the mattress is scientifically engineered to adapt to any body type or a sleeping position. So I kind of, you know, I'll kind of start out sleeping on my back and maybe turn to the side. And that's kind of how I end up spending the rest of the night, is on the side. It doesn't matter how you sleep, because with the Purple Smart Comfort Grid, it actually adapts to any position. It works by actively cradling your shoulders and your hips so you don't get that pain in your neck and you don't get the pain in your hips. And then it gently supports your back for a unique zero gravity-like feeling. It's really fantastic. You know, most mattresses use memory foam, which is an outdated technology developed back in the 1960s. What memory foam does, it actually traps your body heat and provides inconsistent support, which is why you can wake up sweaty and uncomfortable. The Purple mattress uses an entirely new kind of comfort technology called the Smart Comfort Grid. So you've got to check it out. And guess what? You're going to love Purple, and I know you are. Right now, my listeners will get a free sheet set and a mattress cover with your mattress purchase. They're going to throw this in for free just for listening to this podcast. All you need to do is go to purple.com/investing and you'll get that free sheet set. That's so awesome. And you'll get a mattress cover for free just for listening to this podcast and testing it out. Go to purple.com/investing. That's purple.com/investing. And you will be on your way to a better night's sleep. Thanks, Purple. Those are really three key points here. Either your spouse, you or your spouse must spend more than 750 hours more time in real estate business than any other business, and you or and three, work 500 hours per property or per grouping. That establishes you as a real estate professional. And then bottom line, if you qualify for that, then this $25,000 loss per year, that's all gone. It doesn't matter, right?
Right. It's unlimited. Now what you've done is you've changed the nature of your losses from passive and your real estate. Frankly, all of your income, let's say that, you know, you pay down your real estate and you start making income. It's going to be it's not going to be passive either. So you're changing the nature of the income and expense from passive to ordinary is what you're doing.
So right. we talk about passive income so much on this show, but really ultimately we want to get to the point of making it active.
Yeah, we really do for tax purposes. Okay. Now the reality is that, you know, there are some people who can't do that. Okay. So I'm going to maybe give people something that this is something that their tax advisors probably have not suggested to them. And that is that there are ways to make your business, let's say you've got a business that you work in full time, okay, and then real estate's part time, like I do, okay? I have a business full time, I have a real estate part time. So it's very difficult, and my wife also has a business full time, very difficult for us to be real estate professionals. In fact, it's just never gonna happen. We're not gonna qualify as real estate professionals. So what we have to do is we have to take our other, you know, other businesses and say, how can we make those passive? Well, they're always going to be active to us, okay? Which means because I'm putting, like say it, it's full-time business to me. However, many of us have children or parents that we're supporting. Well, if they own part of the business, guess what? If they own part of the business, it's passive to them if they're not working in it. So I can have my son own part of my business, and that income that flows through to his tax return, okay, doesn't mean he has to get it, just means he has to report on his tax return. Okay, that income that flows through to his tax return is passive. Okay, now if he also owns some of the real estate, his income from his loss from the real estate is also passive. Now what we have is we have a matching of passive loss and passive income, and we're able to actually use the losses to offset the passive income from the business. Well, I couldn't do it if I just retained 100% ownership of the business and the real estate. I can do it if I have somebody else who's not involved in the business own part of my business and part of my real estate.
Now, I have a funny story about this because when we had one of our first onboarding calls with ProVision, Jonathan, who's our contact there, he said, okay, can we find a way to qualify you as real estate professionals? And I was pregnant at the time. I have a real estate license, but I don't use it actively on behalf of other people. And Clayton had a full-time job at Fox News. And so he said, well, let's see if we can make it so that one of you meets these requirements. Well, Clayton spends almost all of his waking hours on real estate investing business.
Right. I spend 750 hours a week on real estate.
So we said, well, yes, Clayton meets the 750-hour requirement, but the part about spending more time in your real estate business than other business was tricky because he had a full-time job at Fox News, but Clayton worked weekends. So really, he was only on the air 8 hours a week. And so it was easy for us. And so Jonathan like basically came through the phone and gave us a high five. It was like, okay, I can make this argument. We're off to the races. So I think there are all kinds of ways. You know, I know you just had a call with my mom and she's retiring. And you said, can you spend 15 hours a week in your investments? And she said, oh, absolutely. Unfortunately, that 15 hours a week now is because she's partnered with us on some of our investments is bugging me. So thanks for that.
There you go.
She's like, how's the rehab on this going? I'm like, I don't know. And she's like, Nat, we got to get, come on. Who do I talk to? So now I got a bird dog.
Right.
That's awesome. Hey, that's fantastic.
So what specifically goes into that loss? We're talking about we want passive loss. We want it. We want it. We want it. So what goes into that loss? Why do we want it?
You know what? So all of the expenses of the real estate, including the depreciation, including your interest on your mortgage and So we've all heard, right, that mortgage interest is now limited and property taxes are now limited to deduct. Well, that's only your personal home. But if you actually are generous and you have a home that's rented to somebody else, those taxes, those property taxes, and that mortgage interest is unlimited deduction if you're a real estate professional. So you can deduct all of your expenses against your income. So you may have $1,000 a month of income from your rental property, and you may have $200 of cash flow a month from your rental property. But that's your cash flow. That doesn't mean that's your taxable loss, because you haven't included depreciation in coming with that $200. And particularly if you do, and I know a lot of the properties you deal with are small, but there's actually some online tools for doing what we call a cost segregation. I know we've talked about this in a podcast before, but there's some online tools that would allow you to do your own cost segregation on those small properties. Your depreciation could easily, especially if you have a mortgage, on the home, your depreciation could easily outweigh that $200 of cash flow that you get every month. So that, and it's that negative number after depreciation, that's what creates the loss. Now that loss, you know, you get, you know, 5, 10, 20, 30 properties, 100 properties, like you were talking about. Now you may have, let's say that loss is like $100 a month, so $1,200 a year. But now you got 100 properties. Now that's $120,000 a year, okay? And $120,000 a year, that means that you pay tax on $120,000 less of the income you earn from other sources. So first of all, you're paying no tax on your real estate income, zero, okay? And second of all, let's say you have a high-paying job. One of you has a high-paying job of $400,000. Instead of paying tax on $400,000, you're going to pay tax on $280,000. In a for point of reference, in a 40% tax bracket, that $120,000 to you is worth $48,000. I mean, think about the real estate you can buy with $48,000 when you combine it with some a little bit of leverage.
Right. And what about the actual purchase of the property? Let's say you spend $100,000. Does that go into a loss in that given year?
The purchase of the property, okay, so we have to break this down a little bit. But the purchase of the property, that's really what's being depreciated, okay? It's that number that creates your depreciation. However, in the year you buy it, you're actually buying a lot of things. And for the first time under this new tax law, I know we're going to talk about the new tax on a different segment, but it first time under the new tax law, you now get to use what we call 179 for rental real estate, okay, for residential real estate. So there are actually a lot of things that you buy when you buy a house. You buy you're probably buying a dishwasher. You're probably buying the stove, the oven. You're probably buying a lot of things, ceiling fans, carpets, etc. Things that are really not part of the ground. They're not attached. They're not part of the real estate itself. Rather, they're what we call personal property. Okay, tangible personal property, and that is actually we can deduct in the year we buy it under Section 179, or we can depreciate it over a very short time, 5 to 7 years. And there's other things that we depreciate faster. So we might depreciate, for example, the landscaping. And let's say there's a carport; those are depreciated over 15 years. So where the real estate itself is depreciated over 27 and a half years, so that's about 3.5% a year. The rest of it can be depreciated a lot faster, and that's why you do a cost segregation. That's when you segregate those costs out. Then what you're doing is you're accelerating, speeding up how quickly you can take those deductions.
Okay. So I had this flipped in my head because I thought if you bought a $100,000 property, but you made, say, $5,000 in rent, then your loss was $95,000. It doesn't work like that because the purchase of the property is not part of your loss.
Right.
It's not part of your cash flow, right?
Well, whether it's part of your cash flow is not really relevant. What's relevant is it's not a deductible loss because you own an asset, and an asset gets depreciated over a period of years. Okay. And in this case, it's you know, that the building gets depreciated over 27 and a half years. The landscaping gets and the improvements on the land get depreciated over 15 years. And what's inside the home really gets depreciated over somewhere between 5 and 7 years. And you actually do a cost segregation to determine, you know, what those are. And then the land doesn't get depreciated at all. So some portion is allocated to the land. Okay. And that portion just never gets depreciated because even the IRS has figured out the land doesn't wear out.
Yeah. Okay.
Wow.
My father, he owns a pretty large landscaping firm. And so he depreciates all of his equipment pretty aggressively. But other types of investment, like a stock account, does not depreciate at all, right? So if you were to take this same amount of money and put it in a mutual fund, you wouldn't get these benefits. That's sort of the bottom line why people ask.
On top of that, in a mutual fund, you can actually be taxed on income you didn't get. Okay?
Because you're taxed on the turnover inside of it.
Exactly. You're taxed on the turnover inside of it. You can actually lose money in a mutual fund from when you bought it. And actually have to pay tax on gains from the sale of the stocks that are inside the mutual fund.
Yeah, another paper asset problem.
Yep, a little challenge to paper assets, which is why if I were doing paper assets, I'd be in a Roth IRA or Roth 401k, right? So I'm not taxed on it.
Right. This is great. So passive loss, deep diving that. Natalie, any other questions on this? And Tom, anything we didn't cover that you think is important?
I do have more questions, but I feel like we should save them for the one about the tax law because
there you go.
Right. Yeah. So we're going to have a whole nother episode and Tom will be back on the show. We're going to talk about all the new changes in the 2018 and up through, what is it, 2026 tax law?
Yep.
2026. So Tom will be back. Tom, thank you so much for joining us to talk about passive loss on the show. How can people learn more about Wealthability?
You know, best way is come to our website. We have a brand new website, wealthability.com. And this is about, Wealthability is about your ability to create your wealth. So I love the, you know, being on your show, Clayton and Natalie, because that's what you're about, is you're about people creating their own wealth rather than turning it over to somebody else. That is the key to Wealthability. So join us at wealthability.com. If you'd like to schedule a consultation, there's a button right on the top. And you're welcome to schedule a consultation with one of our client service curators.
Wonderful. Wonderful. Thank you so much, Tom. We really appreciate it.
You bet.
And thanks to all of you for downloading and subscribing to the Investing in Real Estate show. Now go out there, take action, become a real estate investor. And if you can, become a real estate professional. Remember, that's 750 hours in 1 year. See if you can pull that off. Until next time, everyone, we'll see you back here on the big show.